Good morning. You are tuned in to Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, David Barsamian of Alternative Radio will join us live in the studio after headlines to talk about the latest news coming out of India. Protests that began in Delhi on Sunday have seen nearly 30 people killed, reports of Muslim homes and shops being targeted by violent mobs in the news, and this violence is in response to an increase in protests over a controversial citizenship law. After that, Leland Rucker joins us to talk about the latest news in cannabis, and then John Lendorf is live in the studio for Radio Nibbles. After headlines from the BBC at the bottom of the hour, Tish Buford speaks with Dr. Stephanie Rose Spalding, one of the candidates in the 2020 Democratic primary in the Colorado US Senate race. At 9 o'clock, it is the Radio Book Club, a collaboration between KGNU and the Boulder Bookstore. Today, we hear from local author Janelle Shane. She'll talk about her new book that examines the role of AI, that's artificial intelligence. It's called You Look Like a Thing and I Love You. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. Some Denver International Airport concession stand workers that are employed by HMS Host will be picketing at the airport today. This is part of a week of action as they try to join a local union. The workers work for outlets like Starbucks, and they'll be picketing in the plaza between the DIA terminal and Westin Hotel. They're being supported by United Here Local 23. That's a union representing other workers at the airport that has won a $15 an hour minimum wage, and that's what the concession workers are hoping for as well. Jefferson County Public Schools announced yesterday that it won't hold classes on March 19th because large numbers of teachers are expected to take the day off to join a protest at the state capitol. And the school district says there are not enough substitute teachers to cover for the 84,000 students. The teachers will be gathering at the Capitol as part of the Educator Day of Action event. It's organised every year by the Colorado Education Association. And it's an opportunity for educators to speak directly to lawmakers about legislation impacting schools and teachers. This year, the union is supporting legislation that would create special funding for teacher pay raises based on the cost of living in a particular school district. That bill was approved already by the Senate Education Committee, but it faces further debates. The teachers' union is also calling for a statewide ballot initiative for funding education. They're calling on lawmakers to replace the $570 million in cuts that have been made to education in recent years. Other statewide school districts will also see teachers rallying at the Capitol on March 19th. Denver Public Schools told Chokeby, Colorado, that they don't yet have any solid plans in place to handle potentially large numbers of teachers' absences, but they say they hope to make a decision in the next few days. Other metro area school districts, Aurora, Cherry Creek and Douglas County, will be on spring break that week and therefore not impacted by the rally. The Colorado State Legislature yesterday gave the final vote in abolishing the state's death penalty. Colorado now joins 21 other states in repealing capital punishment. Lawmakers at the State House debated for nearly 5 hours on Wednesday before they voted 38 to 27 for the repeal. There have been several attempts in recent years to abolish the death penalty in Colorado. This year has seen about 36 hours in total debate and testimony in the bill in both the state Senate and the House. In the weather today, breezy conditions around the Front Range, but mostly sunny skies, highs in the mid-40s, even warmer on Friday, getting up into the mid-50s for Friday and Saturday, but a chance of snow coming in Sunday night and sticking with us through Monday when we'll see temperatures drop. It is 10 minutes past 8 o'clock. You're listening to KGNU. As we heard in Democracy Now! Just about 15 minutes ago, Muslim homes and businesses have been targeted in cities around India, particularly Delhi. This is also happening while protesters are out on the streets, as they have been for several weeks, protesting a controversial citizenship law. Since Sunday, it's reported that nearly 30 people, in fact, have been killed in Delhi. Joining us now to talk about this is David Barsamian of Alternative Radio. David, thank you for coming in. These reports coming from the BBC, we are hearing some reports about what is happening, what really is happening in India, because this is quite unprecedented, the level of violence that we're seeing.
Actually, I beg to disagree. Good morning. This is quite precedented. There have been multiple pogroms against Muslims in particular since India's independence in 1947. Most recently in Delhi in 1984, when about 3,000 members of the Sikh, mispronounced Sikh, community were massacred. There were anti-Muslim pogroms and massacres in 1992 in Bombay, in 2002 in Gujarat. So this has been a part of a fabric of Hindu violence and Hindu supremacism asserting itself. Now, the latest death toll in Delhi, which incidentally, I lived in Delhi for 3 years. I know some of these neighborhoods and many of the people who live there, is up to 37. Hundreds have been wounded, many of them gunshot wounds. And every single credible report that has come through has commented on the role or the lack of role of the police. There are tens of thousands of Delhi police officers and constables, many of whom just stood by watching mosques being attacked and burned, watching what are called mazar, which is a Muslim a sacred site where a saintly figure had been buried. I want listeners to know about the constellation of Hindu supremacist organizations that are at the center of what is going on. This is called the Sangh Parivar, the family, literally family. Parivar is family. Family of Hindu nationalist organizations. So it consists of, and these are all acronyms that are used in Indian English as well, such as VHP, which is the Vishwa Hindu Parishad, the Bajrang Dal, the RSS, the notorious militia wing of the Hindu nationalist movement. That's RSS stands for Rashtriya Sevan Sevak Sangh, and its political party, which is the BJP. The Bharatiya Janata Party. Narendra Modi is the head of this political party, and the second most influential person in his regime in Delhi is a man known as Amit Shah. He's the home minister. And I mention that because the police in Delhi, Delhi has a unique structural political situation. It's the national capital. It is also called a union territory. So it has its own administration. The police come under the direct rule of the home ministry of the national government, Amit Shah, who is also from Modi's home state of Gujarat, who has been implicated in crimes and violence in the past, and is known as a Islamophobe and someone who is advocating Hindu nationalism. So all of these neighborhoods in northeast Delhi, Jafarabad, Mojpur, Gokulpuri, Chandbagh, the population of Delhi is close to 30 million. It's one of the largest cities in the world. And it is, as I said, the regime of the BJP, which Donald Trump, you know, has celebrated and has called Modi a great man, presumably in line with other great men that our great leader himself admires, selling military hardware to a country that to this day has more poor people than all the populations of sub-Saharan Africa combined. So you have to wonder about, you know, the need for military helicopters and other equipment that India is buying from the U.S. So Trump has recognized in Modi a kindred spirit. I think that was pointed out by one of the guests on Democracy Now!, a professor visiting from Cambridge, England, who's now in Ithaca, New York. But I would I'd be cautious about the analogy she drew with Nazi Germany and fascism. I know it's easy to jump to that conclusion, but I think we should be cautious, and we should also have the historical context of what happened in 1946-47 when the British divided India into a largely Hindu India and a largely Muslim Pakistan. India today has more than 200 million Muslims living in the country in a population of about 1.3 billion. Hindus are overwhelmingly the majority, around 900 million. So, and this is a very unique Islamic culture that developed in India beginning in the 11th century that has had tremendous syncretic power in music, in cuisine, in languages. It has melded something known as the Indo-Islamic civilization. That's all under attack by these Hindu nationalists who want to make India a Hindu state.
Now, you mentioned, of course, Donald Trump's really aligning himself politically with Narendra Modi. He, of course, just visited there. How significant was that visit? Were there any surprises that came out beyond what we already know and have been discussing, the fact that they are very much politically aligned?
The shamelessness of Modi and Trump at Mahatma Gandhi's gravesite, it's called the Rajghat in Delhi. Actually, I used to live literally a few blocks from this sacred site. And so the spectacle of them, throwing flowers on the gravesite was, I thought, just, again, another example of cultural insensitivity and hypocrisy in which our own great leader seems to have a particular urgent need to express. Modi, you'll recall, was the prime minister of the Indian state of Gujarat in 2002 when there was another massacre of Muslims. Going back a little bit to 1992, it's an interesting parallel there to see that a mosque was the trigger point for another massacre of Muslims then. The Babri Masjid was a 15th century mosque which Hindu nationalists, without any evidence, claimed that it was the burial site or the cremation site of Lord Ram, the chief god of the Hindus. This mosque was attacked and literally destroyed. A Hindu flag was raised on where the minaret was, and I was struck by what happened to a mosque in Ashoknagar, which is one of the areas of northeast Delhi under attack. The same kind of thing happened. The mosque was burned. Hindu nationalists climbed up to the top and, inserted a Hindu flag, a Hindu nationalist flag. It's a saffron color. So it's a very dangerous situation. Incidentally, this afternoon at 3:30, a wonderful Indian scholar from Kashmir, Atar Zia, will be speaking at the Boulder Public Library about Kashmir and the ongoing crisis there. See, this is all part of a larger fabric of Muslims being besieged by the Hindu majority. And Kashmir has been going on since 1989.
There are also a lot of concerns about a related issue, which is this new citizenship law. And there have been a lot of protests, and not just on the streets of Indian cities, but the streets of major cities around the world as well. Take us through exactly what that law is and how Muslims are being specifically targeted through that.
It's called the Citizen Amendment Act, the CAA. Again, one of these many acronyms that, inform any discussion about what's going on in India. It was enacted by the Hindu supremacists in the parliament in December of 2019. And it is targeting Muslims in a very special way. There are three adjoining countries to India that are directly affected. They are Muslim majority Pakistan, Muslim majority Afghanistan, and Muslim majority Bangladesh. Total population, almost 500 million people. Any Hindu person seeking asylum from those countries will be granted asylum and citizenship in India. Excluded are, however, Muslims. Now, this is a very remarkable and significant because the many Bangladeshi, in particular, refugees are climate refugees fleeing from the rising sea levels that is inundating the Bay of Bengal and this huge delta. So they're being pushed north and west into India. Hindu supremacists do not want those types of people entering the country or, you know, according to them, being granted any kind of a facility of citizenship. So there were peaceful demonstrations going on in Delhi a couple of days ago. These demonstrations were attacked. Apparently, what happened was one of the members of the BJP, this Hindu Nationalist Party, made a very inflammatory speech about, you know, these people have to be removed, they have to go. That was a cue for mobs to start attacking these peaceful demonstrators, overwhelmingly women, Muslim women and their Hindu women allies who were peacefully objecting to the implementation of this discriminatory law, the CAA.
What can people look out for? What should people pay attention to now in the coming weeks in response to this, and not just what's happening in India, but the international response and maybe the U.S. response to this?
Yeah, there's not much we can do about India, you know, in a practical way, perhaps ridding ourselves of some of the mythologies about, you know, this wonderful world's largest democracy. It has very serious problems, as we do right here at home. So I would direct attention to the Islamophobia and the anti-Muslim rhetoric that has been part and parcel of this particular regime in Washington, but also has a very deep history in this country as well. So getting rid of those fantasies about India and being realistic about, you know, what the country is doing and how it's doing it and how all these movements are, all these supremacist movements, which privilege one community over another, have to be guarded against. We have to be really vigilant at this time.
David Barsamian of Alternative Radio, and we direct people to alternativeradio.org as well, because I know you have a wealth of talks there on what's happening in India, in Kashmir, and a lot of historical context on there too. Thank you so much for coming in this morning.
You're welcome.
It is 8:23. You're listening to KGNU. Leland Rooker is the senior editor at Sensi magazine. He joins us Thursday mornings to talk about the latest news in cannabis. Today, we're taking a look at what's going on in Weld County. They've announced a new campaign, well, just at the end of 2019.
Yeah, this is something came up on December 26th. The Weld County Health Department announced a new campaign, Marijuana is Not Harmless. And it's pumping out social media posts, billboards, advertising. That it, one of the billboards says, a Coloradan is killed every 3 days in a marijuana-related traffic crash. And that another thing is, they say, users of cannabis report lower satisfaction of life and poorer mental and physical health. And sources for the campaign, this is where it really comes from. The sources for the campaign is the National Institute on Drug Abuse. That's a research institute run by the federal government. And a report from the Rocky Mountain High Intensity Drug Trafficking Area. And this is a federally funded task force that tracks the impact of marijuana legalization in Colorado. And we've mentioned over the years, their statistics always present the worst case scenario. There's never anything in their reports that's positive about marijuana legalization. And the whole idea of it bringing on poor mental and physical health, I tried to find something on that, and I found a single 2008 study in New Zealand. There's no statistic like that in Colorado. In its report, the Rocky Mountain High Intensity Drug Trafficking Area states that 109 drivers in fatal crashes tested positive for marijuana, but only 25% of those only tested positive for marijuana. They had other substances in their body as well. Only about a third of the 109 drivers had levels of THC above the 5 nanograms per milliliter of blood, which is the legal limit to drive in Colorado. And so all these so-called facts and all this information, it contradicts all the information that's gathered by the Colorado Department of Public Health, the Colorado Department of Public Safety, the Task Force on Drunk and Impaired Driving. All of these things say exactly the opposite.
Well, why is Weld County weighing in this way? Why is it investing tax dollars? Because it is a public entity. It's the Weld County Department of Public Health is investing in these billboards. Why, do you think?
You know, I don't know. That's what troubles me the most, is that these billboards use certain statistics to kind of scare people. And nobody in the cannabis industry says that marijuana is harmless. Nobody has ever said it was harmless. It's not for everybody. Nobody in the industry says that. You know, it's not like everybody in the industry wants everybody in the world to use cannabis. That's just not part of the deal. And these kind of statistics, when they come out on billboards and stuff, they get people upset, they get people concerned. And since they're not exactly what I would call real statistics, that's really troubling.
Well, watch out for the billboards. You'll see them around Weld County. Leland Drucker, senior editor at Cincy Magazine. You can catch more of his writing online at cincymag.com or here on Thursday mornings here at KGNU. Thanks, Leland.
Thank you.
And it's time now for Radio Nibbles.
Have a banana, Hannah. Try the salami, Tommy. You with the gravy, Davy.
Everybody eats on Thursday mornings, and John Lendorf joining us live in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Maeve.
Lots to talk about today.
The future.
The future of food.
Yeah.
It's now.
Yeah, not next week, not next year, but 20 years from now.
Take us through this. This is a column you're writing in Cincy Magazine, and you're taking a look. We've talked about some of future food issues in the past. Some of them don't sound quite so appetizing. I would hope the future of food is maybe a little bit more palatable than some of the things that we've discussed in the past. What can we expect?
A number of things. I'm in this column, you can read it at cincymag.com. I talk about what food's going to be like in 2040 here and around the world. And it's a bunch of things. One is that eventually locally grown is going to mean that it's grown vertically in, huge tall buildings or spread out buildings where, when you go to the grocery store, they will pick the lettuce at the grocery store, which takes care of some environmental problems and water usage and a lot of other things that complicate, getting fresh produce to people, especially in food deserts.
Well, this sounds like something that we're already seeing in many places. I know there are urban indoor farming that is using
the very beginning farms, of it. Yeah,
but you're seeing this as more widespread.
I think every grocery store. The other thing that's happening, and the coronavirus kind of brings it to mind, but we're gonna in 20 years there will be dramatically fewer retail food spaces where you can actually walk around and shop with other people. I think it'll just be old people like me, who like to go grocery shopping, who there's a lot more delivery, there's a lot more pickup. Ultimately, I think this is bad for community.
Well, you talk about maybe AI coming into the fore there, artificial intelligence. This is actually a topic we're going to be exploring further with the local author coming up at 9 o'clock. Will we have robots doing our grocery shopping? What's going to happen?
Well, that anyway is happening already through Amazon. But, have you had your chip implanted yet?
Not yet.
Well, it won't matter because essentially you'll walk in the store, there'll be face recognition that'll connect to your credit card, and it'll watch what you pick up, and you can just walk out of the store. But I'm not sure that actually, I don't know. That scares me a little bit.
Well, you also write about waste, because that's a topic, of course, we're exploring throughout the year. But part of what you're talking about in the future is when waste finally makes tastes.
Yes, that these all of these things that we're talking about now, using different products, will push to the fore. Using the waste from production, rescuing food, sustainable agriculture, all these things will be pushed forward in a dramatic way because of environmental degradation. It'll happen because it's financially necessary, and it'll be very different than it is now.
Well, people can read more about the future of food in John's column. That's at scentsmag.com. But in the more immediate time frame, there's some news in terms of food.
Yeah, absolutely. This is big news for bagel lovers. I had just gone to Wood Grain Bagels in Boulder for the first time, and that was extremely tasty. And almost immediately, I heard that my favorite bagel spot, Rosenberg's Bagels, will open up soon on the hill. In the former Rose Hill Wine and Spirits, is going to serve breakfast, lunch, and become a dinner place at night. On top of that, a new Jewish deli is going to open in Avanti downtown. Avanti is going to be where the Cheesecake Factory was, as well as a true New York-style pizza place with foldable slices. So we're pretty excited about that.
And in our latest shout-out in terms of waste being used for taste, you have a shout-out around coffee.
Yeah. Our friends at Erie Coffee Roasters put out a message, and they say every couple of weeks we have loads of jute coffee bags, coffee chaff in wooden pallets, and you can just go and pick them up. The coffee chaff is the outside of the beans that come off as they roast them. It makes wonderful, wonderful compost, and smells pretty good, too.
So get a hold of Erie Coffee Roasters. Well, the best thing you've tasted this week?
Actually was those bagels at Wood Grain Bagels, and I'm looking forward to next week. Supersized.
Radio. Supersized with the dessert. Okay. As an extra course, hopefully. I hope you bring in chocolate. Well, I know you'll have some tasty treats to sample live on air. It is, of course, our spring fund drive and bumper-sized radio nibbles ahead.
And we certainly welcome any food businesses within the sounds of our voice to help us with thank you gifts, gift cards for folks who become members of KGNU.
And we'll have lots on offer, so do tune in then. It's next Thursday.
Next Thursday. Be here.
Bon appetit.
My house, Face, Buster, Chef, Chops, Fump. Everybody eats when they come to my house.